Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for January 12th, 2009, and on today's episode, we have an interview with Joseph Ferranda and Rachel Rockwell from Miss Saigon. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago. And let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Joseph Anthony Ferranda, who is a major musical comedy talent who is starring in Drury Lane Oakbrook's production of Miss Saigon as the engineer. Hello, Joseph.
Hi, Tom.
Great. Thanks for having you on our show. And tell us about Miss Saigon and the role of the engineer, which I think is one of the great roles in modern musical theater.
Well, I agree with you. It's Miss Saigon is a reworking of, I suppose, an updating of the Madame Butterfly story about a soldier who goes to another country to fight in a war, and he meets a local woman who he falls in love with, and he leaves in all the complications of war has, and you find out later that she's conceived a child by this soldier, and he goes back looking for her, basically, and the story kind of has a tragic ending from there, which I guess I will leave everyone hanging with that.
Yeah, well, and your role is the engineer. He's the kind of the character that sort of anchors the whole show.
Well, it's funny because in the Madame Butterfly story, he's kind of a minor character of the marriage broker, but in this particular reincarnation of that story, it's a great role, and I'm just honored to be following in the footsteps of Jonathan Pryce and subsequently every other actor that they've cast in it has been an actor of color. So I'm proud to be continuing that type of lineage, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw Jonathan Pryce do it, and he's a major talent.
Yes.
But I think you have put a definitive stamp on the role.
Well, thank you. It's a great role. I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime role for an Asian actor.
So tell us about this slimy kind of character.
Oh. Well, yeah, I think only because of the time that it's set in the 70s, and at the end of the Vietnam War, it mirrors a lot of the cynicism that was felt, especially in the younger culture at that time. And I remember growing up in the 70s about how the veneer of the American image was tarnished quite a bit by the Vietnam War, and so the engineer in itself is a symbol
he's kind of like the street hustler, right?
He's
the guy that's it's all about money and all about surviving, right?
Exactly, and in that sense, he's a product of America's colonization, or if you will, or intervention into the southeast, or even America's involvement in war globally, and so he picks up on that kind of American sense of capitalism, and so it turns into something sort of tawdry.
And you get some of the great lines in the show. I mean, you got the. A lot of them are almost in rhyme too.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because it's sung through. So, but a lot of the rips. I know you're ripping the French. You're making attacks on America.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a role. And so, tell us how you prepare for a role like this.
Well, especially for this. I mean, and it's got the stamp of Jonathan Pryce on it. I think a lot of it has to do with just trying to tell the story. In itself, I mean, there's so much going on, and of course, the main story of the girl and soldier is I think I tried to just embellish that story more than anything else, and keep it very simple, about a man who is a survivor, and I think it speaks about war in itself.
Yes, it does. The young lady that's playing Kim, Melinda Cuella Smith, you've been in shows with her before, right?
Yes, Melinda Chua Smith. Yeah, she's a really wonderful. She came in, I think, the second or third year of the first national tour, and she was all of like 17, 18 years old, and she was just wonderful back then and wonderful now. It's just a pleasure to work with her.
Yeah, and tell us how many performances you've done as the engineer.
Oh, for goodness sake, a lot. I got to take over for the really wonderful engineer, Kevin Gray, who opened their show in Toronto. And that was in 95, so I played it from 95 all the way to 2000 when it closed. So it's racked up quite a few. And then I got to do three local, regional productions also. So I've lost track, really.
Well, I'll tell you what Stacey Flasser did with the choreography in this show, particularly the American Dream number. I thought she almost reinvented it.
Oh, she did, and it's just so refreshing to see it with new eyes. And Stacey is just marvelous and marvelous to work with, and so creative. I've just really enjoyed working with everyone. Just enjoyed working with her. She's just a blast.
Yeah, and I think that really made the show, because that's such a powerful number.
It's the capper, I suppose. Now it's the signature capper of the show, and she really did a wonderful job with the number.
But I thought what you did again with the number over the time, you really, really made it special. You got those little things going, the little tones and the body language to go along, to give it some edge.
Well, Stacey really had a lot to do with that. Well, actually, Stacey and Rachel, I mean, a lot of it, the creative team there is just really powerful. And it's so refreshing to have a feminine point of view also. I mean, the three ladies who had the creative team were just so innovative. And their point of view was just so much more interesting than what I've had worked. Not that it was better or anything, but it was just a great sense of a different point of view. I just loved working with them.
Yeah, and it's I give kudos to Kyle DeSantis for having the chutzpah to, you know, to trust a show of this magnitude to, you know, young women who don't have a big track record of as directors and music directors and choreographers, but they have a good body of work.
Yeah, no, Kyle, boy, it was a big gamble, and I think it paid off really well. I mean, he and Bill Osatek, the artistic director, just laid it in their hands, and they've just done such a great and caring job with the show.
Yeah, I believe so, too. And one of the things that stood out is on a lot of the tours, and I don't know, when you're on stage, I don't know if you hear that because you're not in the audience, but sometimes they overmodulate it, and the singing gets garbled, and you kind of lose the words.
Well, yes, and I think that has to do with the original direction, because a lot of it, the tempos were so much faster back then, and especially on our stage, it's so intimate and so close.
But yours, every word you could understand.
Yeah, and
everybody
know,
was commenting on that. For the first time, they heard some of the great lyrics of some of the big anthems and the big ballads. But your stuff, you know, that has so much edge to it.
Yeah.
A lot of it is your articulation. I mean, I got every. You were getting the laughs
because
we understood it.
Well, yeah. Well, articulation. That's just great teachers that I've had. But I think the fact that they really, really stressed the text in this particular production was very telling. I mean, And you're right up close to the audience, so
yeah,
I think they really, really do respond to it. And when we did it on tour, what they really wanted to stress was the epic feature of a large stage and small scenes being played within that big void. So I mean, that was their artistic take on it, and so this was so much more different.
Yet you did, as much as you did it on the smaller stage, the more intimate stage, you still had the big feel of a big show to it. I mean, the lighting and sound was awesome.
Oh yeah, I mean the lighting was just incredible, and they really they've improved the sound system.
Yes, they certainly have.
And it just makes everything so much easier on stage. It's really a compliment to our production staff and the vision that Kyle has, and so it was marvelous. It was so much easier.
Well, it's. I think it's going to be one of the hit shows, and I've made the prediction, and I'm pretty accurate on this. I think you're in Jeff Award territory with your performance.
Well, the wonderful thing about this particular show is the role of the engineer is just so delicious, and again, it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime roles where all I have to do is step into the role and on stage and interact with the cast, and the material in itself just really carries you every night, and it's so much fun. I mean, it's when you have so much fun working and you're getting paid for it. I mean, it's just makes everything so much better, and it just really is satisfying.
Yes, it certainly is, and as I said in my review that's up on ChicagoCritic.com, that your performance alone makes it worth coming to see the show.
Oh, thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
I mean, you have a lot of help, but I'll tell you, you really anchored the show, and everybody was saying that.
Well, I'll tell you, to work on stage with the actors, the Chicago actors that I have to work with in this particular show, just makes everything just so much more enjoyable, and it's a pleasure to work on there.
Yes, and I was telling folks, for $28 to $33 a ticket, it is such a bargain to see a full Equity production that's, you know, that was on the level of the tours and the original shows at less than half the price of a downtown show.
Well, there you go. And that really is a tribute to Chicago audiences and Chicago actors.
Yeah. It's you know, the Drury Lane Oakbrook has been doing the right thing. They built up a nice subscription base that helps, and now with Kyle running it, they've really upped the ante and the production values and you know, hiring all the top guys like yourself and top directors.
Yes, yeah, and you know, Rachel, I mean, this is a big step for her as far as a female director in Chicago, and I'm just so happy for her.
Yeah, and the show, you know, exceeded our expectations by quite a bit.
Oh, wonderful.
All right, let's change some gears now,
okay,
and let's talk about your background. Besides Miss Saigon, which, you know, you've done quite a bit, I remember you at Drury Lane in The King and I. You played the king.
And that was because of Gary Griffin. It was wonderful because he had the idea that I could do it, and I had never seen, actually, King and I before, believe it or not.
Yeah, because you're an actor and always working. I found that out. That I keep saying to actors, well, how come you haven't seen this or that? You know, because when they're working, they can't be at the theater.
Well, not only that. I mean, it was Yul Brynner, and I figured, well, okay, I get Yul Brynner. That's fine. I don't think I need to see it. And so I was really astounded when I read the script and looked at the material. I mean, it's really a really wonderful show.
Yes, it is, and it's one of the big parts.
It is one of the big parts, and what really made it so enjoyable was working with Mary Ernster, who had done the part before.
Yes, Mary is such a sweetheart, isn't she? Yeah.
Not only that, she's just so sharing and just so easy to work with. I just felt like she carried me through that, so it was great.
And at Silk Road, you did Durango. You showed that you're just not a musical comedy guy, that you can do dramas.
Well, you know, I'd really been chomping at the bit to work with them. I mean, they're a young company. It's a company that's emphasizing actors of color. And the fact that there's stories from the Middle East all the way to Asia that need to be told. And it's an exciting company to work for.
Yes, and they do some interesting plays.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And how about Pacific Overtures? You got to tell us about that. That's one of my all-time favorite shows. And the production you were in was incredible.
It was wonderful. And I really have the musical director, Kevin Stites, to thank for that. I had just finished doing Miss Saigon at Houston Theater Under the Stars. And one day we were talking about about Chicago, and I was moving there because my wife at the time was getting her master's at Columbia. And he said, well, you know, have you ever heard of Pacific Overtures? And I said, yes, I had seen it, the tour before I had gone to Hawaii. And I loved the show. And he said, well, they're doing it at Chicago Shakespeare. And he said, I'd like to put you in contact with Gary Griffin, and perhaps you guys can talk about it. And so that led me down to that particular show. And it was just, not only did I was stunned by seeing Mako on stage doing the show. It was a show that had 98% Asian actors on it, and I'd never seen that before in my life.
Well, it's a marvelous piece, and you had a big role in that. And you guys took it to London, right?
Yes, we did. I was so honored, and to be one of the actors chosen to do that, and it was a great, great experience.
Well, that's true. And a couple others that I saw you in, a year with the Frog and Toad, children's. They're starting to do some good stuff.
They are. And again, I just felt so lucky to be working with such a great cast and with not only the Chicago Shakespeare, Chicago Children's Theater production cast, but Harry Godinez was just wonderful to work with as our director.
Yes, I've interviewed him. He's a really genuine and bright, one of the brightest people I've talked to.
I mean, oh yeah.
Yeah, he's really sharp. Also, you were in Urinetown.
Oh yes.
Romance of Magno Rubio at Victory Gardens. That was an interesting show.
Very interesting. An Obie winning show from 2003 on off Broadway, and Lonnie Carter, who's another local Chicago born and raised author, playwright, got to do his work, and I became fast friends with Lonnie, and I've got to do readings of his other plays, and so it's a really wonderful show, but it's actually led me to a nice friendship with Mr. Carter.
Well, that's terrific. Well, tell us now what you have coming in the future after Miss Saigon closes, and I think you run till March 8th.
Yeah, it's a nice long run for an equity actor, and so we're all happy about that. And so I really don't have anything down the pipe. I've got auditions, but I'm just waiting to hear. So
yeah, well, you know, every time I ask people that at the reception last night, I asked a couple of actors that, I'll be darned if I got two press releases today with a couple of those actors I had talked to. So I hope
give
you some good luck on that.
Okay.
But what are some of the roles that you'd love to play in the future?
Oh, one of the shows that I really, really loved, and I got to see the tour in Los Angeles with George Hearn and Angela Lansbury, and that's Sweeney Todd, and that would be a really wonderful show to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see you playing Sweeney.
Now, well, gosh, I'm from your mouth to God's ear, Tom. I mean, I would love to do that show. It's a stunning show, and I got to see the revival of it recently on Broadway, and I just loved it. And so,
the one where they all played the instruments on
yeah.
the yeah, that toured here, and that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, very fascinating.
Yeah, it is. So, what other role? That's it. I could see you doing that role.
Oh, anything that Stephen Sondheim does, I think I would be honored to do. And I've never done Shakespeare before, and so I'm getting my Shakespeare chops in order to do that. Now that would be something I would love to try.
Great.
I've never
yeah.
done that before.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, keep up the great work, and folks, you got to get out to Drury Lane, Oak Brook to see Miss Saigon. Even if you've seen it before, it's been rethought, rediscovered, and it is so articulate. And Mr. Ferrander, your performance was fantastic.
Tom, thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope everyone who sees it will enjoy it too.
I'm sure they will.
The second part of today's interview is the director of Miss Saigon, Miss Rachel Rockwell. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. Let me congratulate you on a spectacular production of Miss Saigon.
Oh, thank you.
I've been looking at the early reviews, so I'm not the only one that thinks it's a rave. I know Chris Jones really loved it.
We we were very, very pleased because we're really proud of it.
Well, tell us now, because I give a lot of congratulations to Kyle DeSantis, and I saw him at the reception, and I said, wow, what a team you put together. And he said, yeah, he said, he said he decided that he wanted to have a female perspective on the show.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. I mean, Stacey Flaster and Roberta Duchek are two of my very best girlfriends. So we've known each other for probably 15 years and have worked together in various capacities over the years as actors. And they've both been part of my production team before. And I truly love working with them. And we are we see things very much the same way. So it was really, really terrific. Stacey and I both are moms to small boys, so that part of the story is extremely familiar to me, and easy to relate to, you know. And when you hire women, you get you get a lot of multitasking. So
yes,
it's
yes.
a good team, you know. And the guys too. I mean, our two of our designers are men. Jesse Klug, who did the gorgeous lights, and Kevin Depinay, whose set is just an astonishing thing. I mean, I think we've never seen anything like it at Drury Lane before.
No, we haven't. And we haven't seen lighting and sound like it. I mean, the helicopter part. You know, I was telling Terry James, he's telling me this story. When they did Miss Saigon, he said years later, and people still come up to him and say, how you got the helicopter on that Marriott stage?
Yep.
They're going to say that to Kyle and to you years from now.
It's, well, Ray Nardelli and Josh Horvath, along with our great mixer, Jeff Dublinsky, did real justice to this sound show that's really, really dependent on how the sound of things makes you feel like you're a part of it. You know, when it's an opera, you've got to be able to hear every word. You know, the whole show is sung, and it's all fully supported by music. So it's hearing the show is critical, and we were really determined to get a team together who could really kind of take this theater to a new place in terms of
well, you succeeded. There was a minor thing with one of the body mics, but that'll happen.
I know.
Well, that can
happen.
We're about
to die, but luckily we also have a backstage technician now who's devoted solely to the maintenance of the microphone. So
oh, that's great.
So she's able to get to it right away. So
yeah, because it was only early. I think it was she got hugged or something, and something got out of whack.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, live theater. That's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Drury Lane Oakbrook has up the ante so much. The sound is so much better. And what a lot of people were saying, one of the things that you did so well was get the actors to articulate and make the sound so that they're not, you know, blasted out like some of the touring productions. You can't understand a word of it because, you know, it's just so loud and it gets garbled.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you're also distracted by the stuff.
Yes.
You know, you start looking at things that have nothing to do with what the emotional moment is, and you are suddenly you've missed critical bits of exposition and information, and you're not even aware of it. And much of that articulation credit goes to Roberta Duchek, our incredible musical director. She did a brilliant job with this huge, huge piece that we, you know, had 2 weeks to put together. So
yeah, that's a lot of people. I'm glad you mentioned it. Don't realize that on these equity shows, because of the costs, and, you know, when they're doing one show after another, you really only have 2 weeks to put a whole thing together, don't you?
We got a couple extra days on this one. We started 3 days early with the principals, and then we had 2 extra days with the ensemble. But, you know, it's as big as musical theater gets, you know, and the ensemble's in so much of the show that it's 30 people that you're moving around.
Yeah, that's true. So tell us what your concept was on the show, because it had all the best parts of good productions I've seen, but you went a little bit further, and there were some little things that I couldn't quite put my hand on, maybe you could tell me about, that really made it work.
Well, we wanted to tell the story as authentically as possible. You know, there's so much that we don't know about the Vietnamese culture that makes the story so much more clear. I think Bubiel and Schoenberg really count on people to have done some homework before they see this play, and so we wanted to keep it as authentic as possible. Every ad lib in the play is in Vietnamese. We did a lot of Vietnamese cultural dance with the lotus lanterns, and also with the bo staff and the dragon dancing in Morning of the Dragon. And we also wanted to keep the focus on the story of this this love affair that blooms in the middle of all of this chaos. And of course, there's, you know, many Kims and Chrises whose stories you'll never hear. And that's what's so tragic about it, was that they were representational of so many people in the middle of this conflict, you know, and how humanity gets obscured by the atrocities of this war. But it, we just wanted to tell the story and get away from all of the trappings of the spectacle era that kind of muddled the show down.
I agree. Isn't it amazing how your generation of directors and choreographers and lighting and, you know, all the creative people are taking these overproduced, overblown shows and bringing them down and making them better when they come to regional theater?
Yeah, I really think so. I mean, I saw the big scale version of this show, and while I was completely impressed by just the scope of it, it was brilliant. I just never was really all that emotionally moved by it, and I really do think when you listen to the words, that it's a beautiful and moving story, and it tells, you know, how war is about so much more than we hear in the news. You know, it's not over when it ends, as it says in the show. And there are so many, I mean, sacrifices, so much more than what the soldiers sacrifice, you know, the civilian sacrifice, the people of Vietnam sacrifice, the mothers, the wives, you know, it's pretty tragic.
Yeah. I think some of the staging you did was remarkable too. I know Chris Jones pointed out, and I got to give him credit, that he thought you brought a lot of it down closer to the people, bringing it more to the edge of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Before there were, a lot of stuff was lost kind of in this big, you know, these big stages and in far away from the people.
Uh-huh.
Was that a conscious on your part?
Absolutely. I kind of wanted to take the small moments and put them under a microscope, because I feel like the war itself is so chaotic that, you know, you have to focus in on these tiny moments so that they become really, really clear. In the big scope of all of those things, you lose these small moments of humanity, and I think it's really important to get very still and very focused so that you can see, you know, that people's lives were continuing in the middle of this conflict. And so, yes, it was a conscious decision. Also, the stage there is very wide and very, very deep. So we pulled the sides in on purpose, and kind of obscured those side playing spaces that always feel kind of dead and are hard to use and hard to light. And we also raked the stage so that...
That's right, you did. And I didn't notice that, but that made a difference.
Yeah, it made a big difference. So you could see everything that was happening upstage for a change, and it didn't feel like people were so very, very far away from you. And we also opened the orchestra pit for the first time ever, fully opened it.
That's right. Yeah, I was sitting back a little bit, which I like in that theater.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no really bad seats at Drury Lane Oak Brook.
No, I mean, some of the extreme sides, you know, you're going to sacrifice just a tiny bit, but we were really careful to try to make that not the case, you know.
Well, you did and succeeded, and I think that, and your casting, I think you really, I mean, starting with Joe Ferrante, you can't go wrong. I mean, he is, I've seen several people do it, and I told him when I interviewed him earlier, I saw Jonathan Pryce do it, and I said, and you're better.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the best. You don't get any better than that, and you don't get any more lucky as a director than to have Joe Ferrante in your company, because he is just an amazing artist. You're more an editor with Joe than you are an innovator, because he brings so much to the table that really it's just my job to, like, keep tabs on it and pick the best of the best to tell the story, and on top of it, he is an incredible leader for a company and one of the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Yes, he is. But your Kim and Chris, nice combination. Tell us about them. They're
incredible. Melinda Chua Smith has played Kim, you know, forever and ever, and she hasn't done it in quite a while. She's now living in Las Vegas, and she is actually the best girlfriend of one of the girls in our company, and we were searching and searching and searching for the perfect Kim, and she said, my best friend is a Kim, and so we got a tape of her, and we fell in love with her the minute, you know, she flashed those dimples on camera, and she's such an amazing actress. I mean, she's just an amazing actress, and that's what you need in that role, is someone who is strong and honest and arresting, and just, she's beautiful. And Kevin Vortman, believe it or not, was the very first guy that we saw in New York, our first audition of the day. And he finished, and we were like, did we just find him? We just got here. We just found him. And then we saw, you know, a gazillion other Chris's, some of whom had done it on Broadway and on national tour. And Kevin was what we wanted. You know, Kevin is a gorgeous voice, incredibly handsome, and has just this incredible dramatic complexity about him that
He certainly looks like a Marine.
I know.
Yeah, and I agree. I was listening to the soundtrack when I was doing my review, and he's a much better singer than...
He sings it better than almost anybody I've ever heard do it. And it's just... And that he's so... you can see the struggle in him, how bottled up he needs to keep everything in order to survive, you know? It's just... I think he's really, really fantastic, and he was a Northwestern grad, so we're really glad to have.
Well, we got to have a Northwestern grad in every show, don't we?
Yeah.
They're all over the place. I kid. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I thought what Stacy did with the American Dream was just incredible. You know, and that's the exclamation point on this show.
It is. Yeah. It is, and you don't need a Cadillac to do it.
No, and you don't need You don't need those gimmicks. You need Joe to sell every word like he did, and the ensemble to do all these creative things that remind you of what the American Dream was. I mean, the staging and lighting on that was just spectacular.
Yeah, we were so happy with how it turned out, and on opening night when everybody cheered and clapped in the right place, we were very pleased.
Well,
pretty cool number.
Yeah, and the whole show is, You got to be congratulating your team, because as I said in my review, and I said to Kyle, I said you guys have the chutzpah to take a big show that, you know, 30 million people have seen.
Yeah.
And where Marriott did a spectacular production.
They did. I loved that production. Yes. I thought it was really beautiful.
And then you guys are going to do it again. And I said, boy, talk about tough territory. I mean, if you can hope to be as good as the Marriott one. And but the risk is that's going to be hard to do. And I'll tell you, most people were saying it's as good as the Marriott one, and several said it was better.
Well, I'm honored to be in that company.
Yeah,
and
you are, you know. And I'll say it was right up there. I would give it a kind of a tie, or maybe give you the edge, because I think the staging you guys did, it just works better on your kind of stage than it did on Marriott stage.
Yeah, it's a proscenium show for sure. But I thought what they did with it was.
Yeah, it was
really, really remarkable. We just were so blessed all the way around to have this incredible team of people who were so committed to making it.
Were you scared going into it, knowing?
Are you kidding?
The way that everyone's going to compare
monster.
It.
Yeah, they don't get any bigger than this, you know. And we were laughing about the scope of it, and you know, it's a tremendous amount of pressure, and the more hype, you know, that was surrounding it, I thought, you know, we just wanted to tell our story. And this, it turned out exactly the way I dreamed it would.
Great.
And that rarely gets to happen.
Yeah,
you know, where you're
right.
Like, that's what I wanted it to be all the way from start to finish. And the experience was what I wanted it to be. You know, it was a remarkable process with these people, designers and performers and producers. I'm just so proud of what Kyle did for us and allowed us to do. He supported us all the way along.
That's fantastic. That's what we need.
It's really a remarkable thing that they're doing. And in times when people are cutting back, they're stepping it up, and it's just amazing. And I hope it does really, really well for them, because they
I do too.
Great art there. I
mean, for $33 on a Saturday night, a ticket.
I know.
I mean, that's incredible. You know, and some of the downtown shows are $85 to $100. And I'll tell you what, your shows are better than most of those. Certainly this one is.
Well, thank you.
I mean, so two people can go and still have dinner and park for free and still
be cheap. And pay the babysitter.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
be cheaper than one ticket for a downtown show.
Yeah, it's really great to be a part of something that feels like it can really help in this great transformation that's going on there. I cared very much for Tony and Chi-Chi in that family, and I hope that they're proud. I think that they are.
Oh, they
Kyle's
would be
done
sure.
an amazing job.
Yes.
Bill Osatek, the artistic director, is leading this theater in the right way. you know, it's just a real, it's a great place to be now.
And it's a new generation. And Kyle grew up with all you guys doing the shows there. Sure.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, he loves the show. It's one of his favorite shows. And he was determined to do it well. I mean, believe me, there was a period where he was really committed to the idea of a physical helicopter. And I just feel really strongly that this piece is not about a helicopter at all, but it's about the people that were left behind.
The more gimmicks you can get rid of, the better. I'm a purist on that way.
Absolutely.
And besides, theater's about creating the illusion. So again, I'm not kidding. A year from now, people are going to say, how did you get the helicopter on this? Because that's what a lot of people saw.
Well, the helicopter in your mind is always scarier than the one that's going to be on the stage.
Yeah.
You know, and if they put one on the stage, all you do is go, I wonder how they did that. And it's 10 minutes before the end of the play, and you never get back emotionally involved with the play. So I'm really glad that he finally relented, because as a producer, the helicopter is a very attractive thing to offer people.
Sure.
You know, but I'm really glad that he was brave.
Well, that's a matter of him trusting his creative team, too.
Yeah, it was really great. And I felt that he did trust us all the way along, and that is such a nice, I mean, that's just a really nice gift.
Well, it's also nice to reinforce that by you guys doing it, which you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And boy, do we love coming to work every day, I got to tell you.
Well, we only got a few more minutes, but I have to congratulate you on that little show you did John and Jen at Apple Tree.
Yeah.
That was marvelous.
Thank you.
I know John Cunningham, and I was saying that's a great breakthrough for him, and Kinley Carter is just such a pro.
I mean, it was the antithesis of of Miss Saigon, and I started Miss Saigon the day of my first preview of John and Jen, so they overlapped, and it was such a lovely, that was a lovely process, because we got to go so deeply into the play, and it's, you know, again, as a mom of a boy and a sister, an older sister of one brother, it was very close to me.
Great.
You know?
Well, you're off to quite a start as a director.
Well, I'm enjoying the ride, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Well, you keep up the good work.
Thank you.
It's, you know, every generation has to be given their opportunity, and you guys and Rebecca and Stacy you're on a roll.
I feel like we are, and I to get to do this with people that you really love and respect is an even better gift, you know?
Yes, yes, it is. Well, thank you so much. And folks, you've got to get out to see Miss Saigon at Drury Lane Oakbrook. It's really a spectacular show. And, you know, and if you go during the week, it's under $60 for two tickets. Incredible. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 12th, 2009. The hit musical Xanadu is coming to the Drury Lane Theater Water Tower Place beginning this Friday, January 16th. Xanadu first opened to critical acclaim on Broadway back on July 10th, 2007, and then went on to win an Outer Critics Circle Award and a Drama Desk Award. This wildly funny musical is the touching story about the nine magical daughters of Zeus who come to Earth back in 1980, disguised in roller skates, leg warmers, and Australian accents. They inspire humans to create truly great work and discover the meaning of the universe's greatest secret, the gift of Xanadu. The show also features many top 20 Billboard hits, including Magic, I'm Alive, and, of course, Xanadu. The performances begin on January 16th at the Water Tower Place. Tickets are currently available, so follow the links on theaterinchicago.com. Timeline Theatre Company will present the world premiere of Not Enough Air by Masha Obolensky and directed by Nick Bowling. This world premiere drama follows famed journalist-turned-playwright Sophie Treadwell as she is drawn into the real-life tragedy of Ruth Snyder's famous 1928 murder trial. The play illuminates the lives of the two women who pushed against the limitations and expectations imposed upon them by society. Playwright Masha Obolensky is a director, playwright, and performer. A reading of Not Enough Air was presented at the Women in Theater Conference held here in Chicago, and she was the recipient of the 2006 Jane Chambers Award. Not Enough Air will run January 24th through March 22nd at the Timeline Theater. To purchase tickets and get all the information, click over to theaterinchicago.com. On a sad note, the founder of the Apple Tree Theater in Highland Park, Eileen Bavers, passed away yesterday morning from complications from breast cancer. She was the leader of Apple Tree Theater since 1983 until she recently retired. Last November, she received a special Jeff Award for her contributions to Chicago theater. Someone special has been lost, and our condolences go out to her family. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Joseph Ferranda and Rachel Rockwell for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I am your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.